Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and once again, we are in the offseason, and now we are getting into kind of the dog days of the offseason of college lacrosse, and that means that we're talking about some topics that are more universal and more timeless when it comes to the sport. And one of the things that I have been particularly interested in over the last half decade or more is the notion of representation for college lacrosse coaches. And so as a result, we are talking to John Colan of Coaches Inc., who's got a deep stable of college lacrosse coaches. We're going to learn more about what representation is, what it entails, why it is a good idea for college coaches to consider, and more. But first, John, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Terry?
Doing great, my man. So Let's get started. What is Coaches Inc.?
So Coaches Inc. is a representation group. It was started by Dennis Cordell upwards of 20 years now, and I have been working there for a little over a decade. We are a group that represents coaches and only coaches. It's four lawyers, and then we have a number of other staff working for us. But Dennis got his start working at the NFL Coaches Association, and he saw a need for representation in that space in the football coaching world, and we have since kind of branched out into any number of different sports. So I personally work with all our lacrosse coaches, and we help in any number of different capacities, not just legal stuff, also helping coaches find new jobs and find new opportunities. So we're able to help from a legal perspective, and we have that's kind of our bread and butter is negotiating contracts and really anything else coaches run into from a legal need. But representation spans a lot more than just looking at a contract.
What's your background? How did you get into representation?
Yeah, so I went to law school at the University of Virginia from 2008 to 2011. And actually in law school, Dennis was, one of my guest lecturers at a class. So we got to talking after, one of my sports law classes. I ended up, interning with him after my second year of law school. And then, right after law school, I jumped in, and I've been there ever since. We were located in D.C., but Dennis and I lived there. And then one of our other partners is up in Boston.
One of the things when I have conversations with coaches, either those who do have representation about why and how they pursued it, or those who don't but are interested in pursuing it, is understanding what the value proposition is. Because I think one of the normal reactions is, I don't think that an agent negotiating on my behalf is going to be able to increase my compensation more than what their fee is. And so as a result, as a pure math problem, it's just not worth it for me. And, you know, I'm not trying to sell anybody on this service, but at the same time, I do think that that's a relatively narrow way of looking at it, and that the value is way broader. So how do you explain the value proposition of representation?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of hinted at it earlier. In some instances, you're right, that might be true. In a very narrow set of circumstances, your contract is your contract. You aren't running into any issues off the field. And yeah, after a year, two, or even three, you might say, hey, what am I paying for? But it's when certain situations arise that the value of having representation really shows itself, and then is worth that in magnitude. So say you have a really fantastic year as a coach, you need to really strike while the iron's hot, right? And talk to as many athletic directors, search firms, whatever it might be, to know that I'm getting the most out of this year. and not just necessarily finding a new job and gaining a bunch more money. No, bringing that to your current administration and then saying, hey, look, here are the various different opportunities I have right now. Can we please renegotiate my contract? And then once we get to the table, having representation, you can know that we have all of the various comps. So we can say, hey, look, you should probably push on this particular note or this issue of your contract, and we can get you, you know, hopefully a lot more money or better language in any particular point in that contract. That's just the contract part of it, though, right? In my opinion, it's kind of insurance, because almost every coach throughout their career runs into a situation that was unexpected, and they should have someone who's seen it over the last 20, 30 years to kind of guide them and give them advice on that. So that's really the way I look at it, is you need to leverage your opportunities, but also always have insurance for anything that's kind of troubling that may be happening.
Yeah. So networking, opportunity to access the upside, and protection against the downside. Those would be three of the top priorities or top value props when it comes to why working with a group like Coach Evening provides value.
Yeah. And you mentioned the networking. You know, we know all those athletic directors, search firms, and other coaches in not just lacrosse, but other sports. I've seen many situations where a lacrosse coach I actually introduced to call it a basketball coach, football coach, a women's basketball coach, a hockey coach, and they may not be able to get them the job, but they're able to put them in touch with someone who knows about an opportunity, or they can give them insight before an interview about that school, about the administration there. And these are all just little value adds on the margins, but as a whole, I think they greatly exceed the fee that we charge.
So you've got a deep stable of coaches, like I talked about, but three that we're going to talk about in this podcast are Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany, Brown head coach John Torpy, and Bellarmine head coach Andy Whitley. How did you get connected to each of them?
So John was actually our first lacrosse client. And I was introduced to him through a friend's intern, ironically enough. It was kind of a random connection, right? And then from there, and in the lacrosse world and kind of comparatively in the hockey world, everyone knows everyone. So John was a great connector. And he actually introduced me to Lars. And Lars has introduced me to other coaches. And then you actually looped me in with Andy, I believe, if I remember correctly.
That sounds right.
Yeah, right. So, you know, the thing about this is you have to do good work for good people, and then they'll refer you to other coaches. Because, as you said earlier, you know, I think a lot of coaches are skeptical of the service in general. And so hearing from a peer, yeah, this is how Coaches Inc. helped me, this is how John helped me, this is how Dennis helped me, is really the most the easiest way to gain some traction. Because me telling someone, hey, here's why it's a valuable service, doesn't do a lot. But I think hearing it from a peer, everyone's like, oh, wow, not only, okay, I trust this guy, but also I don't want to get left behind, right? Like, coaching is always, you know, you want to make sure you're doing everything to succeed as a professional and make sure that your team is in the best position. So if you hear someone doing something that's working for them, you're always going to explore it.
In a competitive field, the notion of playing musical chairs and having the music stop and not a chair available for you is a very daunting one. But one of the elements of those three guys that is compelling is they each kind of recently went through unique circumstances. Lars renegotiating an extension on the back of multiple national championships. Torp transitioning from High Point to Brown, and Andy, maybe not necessarily a recent circumstance change, but a unique point of view given the fact that he had previously worked in the representation industry. So yeah. How do you describe each of those scenarios from the standpoint of, let's just start talking about working through Lars's extension at UVA?
Sure. When John kind of looped me in with Lars, it was pretty timely. I think it was after his first national championship. And so that's a good client referral to get, needless to say. You start there with Lars, for example. You start exploring, okay, let me look at the environment. Let me look at comparables. And let me look at what I believe is achievable here. Fortunately, the UVA undergrad, UVA law. So I did have some relationships with some folks in the administration there, and I could start talking to them. With Lars, it was a unique situation because, candidly, UVA might be the best job in the country, right? And also, there is not the you don't have the NFL or the NBA to kind of say, hey, well, maybe he'll go there. I mean, PLL is great, but the money is not the same as at a UVA or Maryland. So we had to kind of create some kind of leverage there. And it was mostly just, hey, we want to be paid like the best coach in the country. And because look at what has been accomplished and look at what, look at what the other coaches in this kind of area are getting paid. And you want your coach to be able to say, hey, this is the premier place to come. This is the premier institute in the country. So that was kind of the creating leverage there was the most difficult part. And then we were able to negotiate a great long-term deal for him with, a lot of good incentives. And I think he's obviously thrilled to be at UVA, needless to say, and he's going to be there a long time. And he is getting paid like one of the best coaches in the country now. So it was fun for me being my alma mater, being able to negotiate. We did work it for a long time, but it was a very enjoyable contract negotiation.
And with Torp transitioning from one job to another?
Yep. Like I said, John was the first coach I started working with, and he's an unbelievable leader of people, and I've been really thrilled to have the opportunity to work with him for so long now. He does things a unique way, and it's an awesome way, and he loved High Point. And loves High Point still. I know he's still. I was with one of. One of his former players I actually had dinner with a couple nights ago, because almost every year John would send one of his players to me and say, "Hey, can this guy intern for you?" The kid's name is Colin Clothier. That's just the kind of coach he is, right? He like cares so much about his players, not just in terms of trying to win games, but making sure they're successful, throughout college and after college. So I think maybe four of his former players are interns of mine, but, Colin mentioned, he goes, yeah, John just texted me the other night. He started a group chat with all his former players, High Point players too. He's like, I got to still talk to you guys. So he cares so much about his players, cared so much about High Point, but I think he realized, to win a national championship, it's probably going to be difficult there. And that's his ultimate goal, I think. So almost every year we would at least explore opportunities. And candidly, several times he said, I'll explore that, but that's probably not the one I'm going to leave for. And then, finally this past off season, Brown came calling, and, you know, fortunately there as well, I had, relationships with, some members of the administration, and we were able to kind of work on that contract, behind the scenes before, so that we could pretty much sign it, once he made the announcement. And that's another thing, being able to have some sort of middleman in representation group is very beneficial, because a lot of contracts are, pretty clear. Hey, don't go searching for other jobs, right? And of course, everyone has to have a conversation to get another job, but it's helpful to have someone having those initial conversations for you. And I think that's been really valuable for John in our in our career together, is that I've been able to at least poke to some places, say, hey, are you interested? And, they say yes, no, maybe. And then he can make a decision whether he wants to have a conversation. But this year, finally, Brown was the best opportunity for him. And I know he's just going to kill it there.
And then lastly, what's it like having a client who used to be in the industry?
It's great. He understands the lingo. He understands what I'm talking about. He doesn't really need to be coached to coaches by nature are just incredibly loyal people, right? Like to a serious fault, in my opinion, because, you look at college sports and the loyalty doesn't always run both ways. So I think Andy understands, not to say he's not, he's a very loyal person to Bellamy, but he understands what I'm saying. Hey, we need to leverage this situation, or we need to, create some sort of value proposition. Other coaches are like, what do you mean? And he's like, oh yeah. I remember dealing that when I did it. So he's been awesome to work with, and again, also a phenomenal coach. I think he's in a much better industry now than he was. Agent, as far as I can tell.
What is an ideal candidate for Coaches Inc. look like? Somebody that isn't currently a client, but potentially could be after a few conversations.
Yeah. I think it kind of goes back to one of your first questions. In football or basketball, almost every coach nowadays has an agent. And in my estimation, that's a little bit overboard. I don't think the kind of graduate assistant, at a D2 basketball school necessarily needs an agent, because I don't think there's quite as much value we can provide. But in the lacrosse space, those GAs aren't looking for agents, which is kind of nice for me. I think that any head coach really should consider hiring an agent, whether it's Coaches Inc. or whomever, because when you're negotiating employment contracts in a space that's super competitive and where those contracts can be greatly improved with some matter of leverage, then you're crazy not to at least talk to somebody. No one's going to charge you just for a consultation. So, I'll look at anyone's contract and say, hey, I can do this, that, or the other, or I know your situation. There's not a lot I can do here, but you should at least explore it. So any head coach with a contract that's more than one page, absolutely, at least have a conversation with someone. And if nothing else, you'll come away knowing you may need an agent or not. And then also assistants who are one step away from being a head coach. You know, again, I don't think that when you're maybe are two, three steps away from considering yourself a head coaching candidate, you really need an agent, because I think you should be internally networking more so than trying to network with administrators and, you know, search firms. But if you think that your next move is a head coaching position, then absolutely, because then you're one step away from that contract I'm talking about. And you're also, you need to be talking to the decision makers who aren't necessarily coaches in your network. You need to be expanding that network to other people who maybe you don't organically meet as easily.
Two more for you, and we're going to open up the scope a little bit here. You mentioned working with hockey coaches, football and basketball coaches, women's basketball coaches. Where would you say the sport is from the standpoint of women's lacrosse head coaches, particularly because on a percentage basis, so many more women's coaches, so many more women's programs are in, you know, Power Four and other high D1 conferences, where, you know, their peers' compensation and the sophistication of their contracts and the sophistication of the administrators with whom they're negotiating is higher than it is, you know, for the proportion of men's lacrosse coaches and programs.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think women's lacrosse, I mean, the recent news about the professional league is super exciting, and there, I would not discriminate between men's and women's lacrosse at all in terms of the need for representation or the value it could provide. It's really pretty much the same thing. The compensation is not far different, and the contracts look very, very similar. You know, at the end of the day, every school has a army of lawyers working on their contracts, and any head coach should have at least one or two lawyers looking at their contract on the other side, right? Because I promise those contracts are generally written initially very favorably to the school. So you're not always going to be able to change all those terms, and sometimes you're not going to be able to change any of the terms. But just like in men's lacrosse and women's lacrosse, you know, there's tons of opportunities, and you want to leverage those opportunities so that you can not only maybe make a little more money, but change a lot of those clauses in your contract to be more favorable to you and protect you and your family for, you know, however long that contract is. Coaching is the having done this for, you know, like I said, over a decade, it's crazy that I find coaching to be one of the most tenuous and scary jobs around, right? Job security is at a huge premium, and it is really like it can come one day and be gone the next day. So securing a good contract, not just for more money, but for, you know, protection for however long that duration is I think the most important thing from a just strictly professional business standpoint when you are a coach because of that insecurity.
I want to emphasize one point that you made, and it's that even in the instance in which you're not able to change the terms of a contract, having a better understanding of what those terms actually entail, particularly deep in a contract, and particularly if they create a vulnerability for you, is valuable. And I've been in a situation where that just understanding more precisely what a bullet point means, even if I was unable to have it changed, ended up providing intermediate and long-term value for me and for Inside Lacrosse. And I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked.
Yeah. No, and that's like I said earlier, that's one of the very first things we will do. And again, I'm more than happy to spend time reading someone's contract, you know, for free, to let them know, hey, A, B, and C are real pressure points for you. And coaches are paid to coach, and they're really good at it, but they're not paid to read legalese. And sometimes those contracts really are scary, the things I see that coaches have signed and think they have 5 years of guaranteed term, and really they have 30 days. You need to be aware of that so that you can prepare for it.
Last one. How does all of this upheaval in the world of college athletics affect the value proposition of what Coaches Inc. can offer clients going forward?
It's an interesting time in college athletics, needless to say, and I guess I'm understating that. But I think one of the things that you get with Coaches Inc. is like I said, it's not just me. Dennis Cordell works with me, kind of in lockstep with all of our clients, and he has, 15 more years of experience in the college athletics world than I do. We've seen a lot, and we've seen a lot of changes over that time. And I think we can help guide and advise coaches in this time of uncertainty, really well. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but looking at it from both a practical and experiential perspective, but also the legal perspective, saying, hey, here's what, the house settlement means. Here's what and how NIL might go. What we're seeing in other sports. I think it's really good to be a sounding board for coaches. We're all of our clients' lawyers, but I think many of them would say we're also kind of their therapist in some ways, and can tell them exactly. Or not exactly. Give them an idea of what we have seen and what we believe may happen in the future, based on, like I said, experience, but also reading the granular stuff in all the things that are happening right now.
Well, we went for about 24 minutes before that bird showed up. So it's very clear that that bird does not look kindly on the future of college athletics when it comes to the house settlement. But John, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Have a great day. We really enjoy the opportunity to back channel with you and understand a little bit more about what's going on in the world of college athletics. And look forward to talking to you again soon.
It was awesome, Terry. Thanks so much, man.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany, who is a client of John Collins and Coaches Inc. Coach Tiffany, thank you for joining us. How did you come to get to know John and decide that representation was the best path for you?
Started with John Torpy, post game talking, and it just came up in conversation that he had an agent. And I was, it perked my ears like, oh, really? What is there value there? And John Torpy raved about John Cullen and having that relationship. And so, the seed was planted and I pursued it.
How have you found the relationship manifest in your career and the way it's developed?
I really find value in having another person in my corner. And I think all of us like to have more people in our corners. And it's another person who to sound ideas off of. But this is a person who's an expert. This is a person who's been in contractual negotiations, not just lacrosse, but multiple sports. This is a person who's been with other head coaches who've had, tough decisions to make. This is a person who's been with head coaches who maybe are having some issues dealing with, on or off the field. And so, bottom line, we make better decisions when we have more experiences. And if I can lean on someone else's experiences, and someone I can trust, I find great value there. And that's what I find with John Cullen.
You made the shift from Brown to Virginia ahead of the 2017 season. And during the tenure of your first contract, you won two national championships. Certainly puts you in a position to have some advantages going into a renewal or extension conversation. But what was it like, and what source of value did John provide when you were talking to the Virginia administration about your second deal?
And you hit an exact point. I was very, very fortunate. Kip Turner, Sean Kerwin, myself, the men of Virginia Lacrosse, we had a tremendous success there. As I was now in renegotiating a new contract, I was in rarefied air of having coming off two national championships. So, I didn't feel like I had any experience or the professionalism to do this on my own. And to be able to lean in on John Cullen and say, John, so what is realistic? What should we be asking for? You know, what is the going rate out there? This doesn't happen very often. I have no idea what I'm doing here. I'm usually just happy that they've re-upped me, you know, and then I've got a new contract. So because of the uniqueness of it all and having somebody who's done this with multiple sports and multiple head coaches, it was invaluable for me.
A lot of times the focus is on the upside, maximizing the upside, but there's so much about this, and it's kind of true in pretty much any legal setting, where a lot of value comes from protecting on the downside. How do you add that into your decision matrix or the way in which you assess the value?
Actually, that is the greater value when it comes to John Cullen. I've heard of other lacrosse coaches who have agents. I don't know if any of us had agents 15, 20 years ago, but it's becoming more and more common. Some of these agents that I've heard about are more finance background. And I hear some wonderful things about them. What made me more interested in John Cullen is because of his legal background. And you're right. We go out there and, you know, we buy insurance on our house and our car and in other areas of our lives, and that protection and having somebody who looks at deals, looks at the world from a legal perspective, from how do I protect my client, you know, and a, you know, Lars, maybe that's not a good idea to run that event or do this. It's wonderful to have that advice from John.
Is it helpful that he's a Wahoo?
It's funny. I don't think of that enough. That part is fun that he's a Cavalier, but honestly, I don't think of him that way. I've really just grown to think of him as a man who's you know, who's always thinking about, you know, what's the best thing? What's the best thing for my clients? And man, it's wonderful to have. It's not always comfortable to go into, you know, someone's office and say, hey, you know, I'm doing a hell of a job. It's nice when someone else can go into his boss and say, hey, he's doing a hell of a job.
That's a great note to end on. Lars Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us. And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Brown head coach John Torpy, who's been a client with Coaches Inc. for some time now and went through a transition, a job change over the summer. So certainly one of the, you know, kind of more compelling people to speak to on the topic. Coach Torpy, thank you for joining us. How did you get to know John Cullen in the first place, and how and why did you start working with Coaches Inc.?
So I got introduced to John through one of my former players, Jeff Hale. He was actually our first commit ever down at High Point. And Jeff was, I guess, you know, at an event, John was there. John and him started talking. He said, you know, I'm an agent for coaches. And I guess John had said something along the lines of, I'd love to get into the sport of lacrosse. And so Jeff, on a whim, called me, connected the two of us. I started talking to John. Didn't really understand the value of what that position would mean to me in the role that I was at as a coach. And he came down one day to High Point. We got a chance to sit down and talk, and I said, you know, why is this something that I would need? Why is this something that I would want to utilize? And he started giving me, you know, a lot of different reasons. And one of them that I, you know, just remember, and that I, you know, really, it's been really neat over the years, was just the connectivity he had with other coaches and other sports that he could introduce me to, that could become potential mentors, friends in the game, you know, people that weren't just in the sport of lacrosse. And over the years, he's done a tremendous job of introducing me to college basketball coaches, hockey coaches, football coaches. And it's been a really cool way to just, like, you know, find out what other people are doing outside of the sport of lacrosse. And then obviously the ability to look at a contract, the fact that he had a lot of, you know, connectivity in terms of administrators and things of that sort. And so I decided, you know, like, why not? I'll be, you know, one of the first lacrosse coaches that's doing something like this. And it's been a huge benefit since.
And my assumption is never more than when you go through a job transition, which you did this past summer, moving from High Point, where you were the first head coach in program history, now taking over the Brown Bears. What was it like having John and Dennis Cordell in your corner as you navigated that process?
It was great. I mean, usually with positions that are open, they know someone at the school that you might have interest in. And so for that piece, it was important. And just, you know, being able to bounce ideas off of John, I think in that role that he has, you know, played in my life over the last 8 years, he's become a friend, someone that I can, you know, just have conversations with, and someone that I like catching up with every now and again. And he's become a tremendous mentor just in this process of, listen, I would look at this, I would do this, I would, you know, maybe ask for this. And he did that same thing up here, and it becomes a, you know, just a great resource and a great sounding board.
Earlier in this conversation, John mentioned that a handful of your players and former players had interned for him, including one that Inside Lacrosse knows well, Colin Clothier. And I think that was actually when Colin was interning for him, was when you introduced me to John in the first place. What kind of led to that pipeline, and what do you think your players got out of the experience?
Yeah, that was great for a bunch of guys. I think we had four total guys that did that over the years. And a lot of those guys had interest in getting into, you know, sports. And I know a lot of the guys that we had that were interested in getting into sports marketing or communication or sales, you know, like the dream of being like a front office guy in the NBA, NFL. John gave them like a great window into that. With the internships that he was offering them through Coaches Inc. And I know all the guys that had taken part in that all really enjoyed their experience and got to know things from like the contract side to resumes to, you know, seeing how the inner workings of the hiring process worked at the collegiate level. And I know the guys that took part in those really enjoyed, you know, the work they did with John. And you know, I think John enjoyed having, you know, Division I athletes working for Coaches Inc. as well over the course of the summer. And I think the cool thing about the internships was when the guys first started doing them, I don't know if there was kind of a, you know, a set plan for what it was that they were going to do. So they were kind of doing things and changing things on the fly. And, you know, to see those guys put together graphics for coaches, you know, who were going for jobs, to put together manuals, you know, going for jobs, to, you know, be handed, you know, four resumes and you know, look through these, see if there's any typos, see if there's anything we should add to these. It really gave them like a great glimpse into what, you know, college athletics is like. And a lot of those guys have pursued opportunities, you know, in that field since.
Coach Torpy, can't have you on without getting a little bit of a lowdown in terms of how the fall was for the Bears, and we'll get you out of here on that one. As it winds down, what's your experience like getting to know this group and having them get to know you?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, honestly. It's been neat having a new staff, you know, not a new staff, but an old staff, you know, come with me somewhere and bring some familiarity, you know, to the place. It's been incredible getting to know these guys. They are driven. They're hardworking. They are incredibly authentic, cohesive. I mean, everything we've asked them to do, they've done, and they've done it well. And it's been, you know, really neat to watch them grow. There's been a lot of growth over the course of the fall just in terms of the way we're playing, some of the individual skills that we brought to them. And I'm looking forward to attacking the season with this group.
Well, we can't wait to see you out on the field. Coach Torpy, thanks so much for joining us, and good luck over the holiday and in the spring as you get ready to take the field for the first time with the Bears.
Thank you, my man. Always good seeing you.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Bellarmine head coach Andy Whitley, another Coaches Inc. client, but with a added twist, which is, Coach Whitley, you have a better sense of the representation industry than most, or maybe I think all of your peers. We'll get into that in a second, but I want to start by learning a little bit more about the circumstances by which you met John Colin and started working with Coaches Inc.
Well, one of our former basketball coaches at Fairfield was working with him at the time when I was there. And it was at the tail end of my time at Fairfield, and as I was moving on from Fairfield and looking for my next stop, I felt like having some representation just to get to know athletic directors, be relevant within the industry was important. Anytime there's some transition, as much support as you can actually get is, I think, has a lot of value. And I felt like John and collectively Coaches Inc. was kind of warranted where I was in my career at the time.
There, representation among college lacrosse coaches is still relatively new, to the point where I'm unaware of anybody that's ever worked with multiple agents. And so while I think those that have been represented can speak to the value of representation, there really isn't anybody that can speak to the value of one party or entity versus another, except kind of you, because again, like, you can look at it from the standpoint of your prior experience. So for those that don't know, do you mind just giving a quick rundown of what you did before you got into lacrosse coaching?
Sure. When I was in college, for a couple of semesters, I actually lived at home, and I did an internship with a sports agent in Connecticut while I was going to school at my dad's school where he taught, which was the University of New Haven. And the gentleman who I worked with and I ultimately interned with was the certified player agent for our entity with Major League Baseball and with professional football. And you know, so I was able to work with him. He had a client who was a first round pick in the NFL draft. He had about a dozen minor league baseball guys that were at Double A or higher, which is kind of your tipping point to get to the major leagues. And at the time, he had represented Lloyd Mosby and Jesse Barfield when they had signed to play professional baseball in Japan. And those contracts were the largest at the time by an American in Japan. And so I got a chance to work behind the scenes, do a lot of the legwork, see what the negotiations were like and where the value was in protecting the players, and interact with the players and see what they got out of it while I was an intern. And ultimately, he offered me a portion of the company in lieu of a salary when I graduated from college. And so I was able to kind of get my hands dirty. That was also during the ages of NFL Europe. Those European club teams, or those European teams, had a number of European nationals on the rosters, and they came from club teams in Europe that also hired Americans. So I was part of the process of finding guys jobs in Europe playing in what is the European Federation of American Football, which still exists actually at the moment, though not quite at the level that it was when NFL Europe was over there, but still very viable at this point as well. So I did that for about 5 years before he and I ended up moving on and into the real estate business. And then eventually I got into this profession after about 12 years as the managing partner of that undertaking.
So what did that teach you about the value of representation?
I really felt like it helped you be able to gather information. While I'm at this point trying to coach lacrosse and do the best I possibly can for Bellarmine University in terms of the progression of our program, there's trends within the industry, both from a contractual point, from a hiring practices, that I don't have the time nor the experience nor the contacts to be able to take advantage of. And so I think having someone that is in that sector of the coaches industry is very helpful. It helps you keep relevant with the trends in hiring, fair market value of coaches, length of contract, types of benefits in addition to salary. Not everyone's going to get the great, this elite, mid six figure salary, but there's a lot of benefits that can be derived that are beneficial to you as the employee, that also have value to you, that don't necessarily cost the school quite as much. And it just gives you an idea about, like, contracts. Is it viable to ask for a 10-year contract? Is it more practical to ask for a 3-year contract? Those are all trends that are variable, and having someone that is in that industry and can keep you up to date and ahead of the curve in terms of knowledge is extremely, extremely important as you move through your career.
You've described representation as an insurance policy, so I think your prior answer spoke heavily to the upside benefits, but how do you speak to the value of the downside protection against the downside consequences, the downside risk?
Well, I hate to say we all could potentially be fired, but these contractual arrangements are ultimately subject to being ended by one or both parties. If your institution ultimately decides to move in a different direction, your contract is a way for you to have protection so that you don't get caught without a security blanket. You can't be terminated on a moment's notice for on a whim of another of an individual. So it just allows for a little bit of a soft landing and protections against that. It creates some knowns in the relationship between you as the service provider slash coach and the institution as the employer. And I think spelling those out and ultimately having an understanding about what it's going to look like while you are working there, and then what it could look like if one or both parties decide to end the arrangement, and having some predetermined agreements, I think is very helpful. You know, if you're winning a bunch of games and the kids are graduating and the school's really happy with the direction of the program because retention has continued to go well, you know, contracts are kind of unnecessary because everyone's happy with the relationship. But, you know, every lacrosse game is going to be a zero-sum game. Someone's going to be happy with the outcome. Someone's going to be sad with the outcome. And if you are sad enough times as an institution and you invest resources in it, you may become dissatisfied with the arrangement. It just allows you as the coach to be able to prearrange and just predetermine what some of those outcomes will be, and just provides you some protection. At the end of the day, if, you know, I steal a line from Steve Spurrier, you know, you coach at the institution you coach at because they want you to coach there. And as long as they want you to coach there, you're going to do the best job you possibly can. But if they make a decision to change their minds, they absolutely have the right to do that. But they have a responsibility to you as the employee, and ultimately you are entitled to some protections in that arrangement should it decide to be ended.
And the last one, shifting gears a little bit, we're recording this on the eve of Thanksgiving. How do you describe the way the fall went for the Knights?
I'm really happy with where we're headed. We certainly finished last year. We graduated the winningest program in the history, or the winningest class in the history of the program. And I was sad to see that group end, because they gave us a lot of happy moments and a lot of successes. We are transitioning eras effectively as a result. I'm super excited about our young guys. We have 37 freshmen and sophomores, so we are as young as we probably have ever been since I've been here. But on the upside, I think we're as athletic as we've ever been since I've been here. So our ceiling is probably higher than we've had at any point. But as you know, with young guys, you're going to get some ebbs and flows that sometimes, you know, will turn my hair gray and make me want to pull it out. But I think we are going to have a puncher's chance in the league. I like our, you know, I think we are going to compete very hard. I think we are very talented. But I think we are learning how to be Division I lacrosse players at a high competitive level. And I'm optimistic, and I expect there to be some ebbs and flows this year. But I feel like as young as we are as athletic as we've ever been. So I think the future is very bright for us. And we're going to find out pretty quick how good we actually are, because we do open with Duke. And Duke and Coach Donowski have a way of exposing any flaws that you have. So I think we're going to figure out if we what and where our flaws are fairly quickly.
Well, Andy Whitley, always enjoy your time. Thank you so much for joining us. And enjoy the next couple months as you ramp up to the 2025 season.
Appreciate you having me, Terry.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.